Hi, everybody. We're going to go ahead and get started. My name is Chris Stone. I'm a software engineer at Microsoft. I currently work on the analytics and big data team, but for about 8 years before that, I was actually working in the field with all kinds of search technology, everything from Fast Search, if you've heard of that, to SharePoint, and now Azure Search. So as part of that work, I ended up working on the website that powered the NBC Sports 2016 Summer Olympics website. So they have NBC is the exclusive provider of the Olympics in this country, and they have a big website devoted to results, athletes, events, and all the articles that are coming out of their news properties. So I'm going to kind of talk about three things today. I'm going to first focus on Azure Search, what it is, what are some of its key features, why you would use Search. Then I'm going to go into the actual case study with NBC Sports and the Olympics and talk about how they use Search, how we worked with them to integrate their existing content and make it searchable. And finally, I'm going to do a little bit of a, if not a code walkthrough, a sort of configuration walkthrough with some pulling existing content into Search, making it searchable, and then pulling in some more advanced features that we can make some of that search a little bit more advanced. So there's a handful of typical scenarios that customers usually will look at when they're thinking about search. The most logical one is e-commerce. So if you think about Amazon, most people aren't really navigating the site by any particular taxonomy. You enter in a few search terms, and then you apply some filters and maybe some facets or navigation based on that. Maybe you're faceting on a price or a product category, and then drilling down your category search based on that. On the second one, newsfeed, is really what NBC was looking at. This is a continuous stream of information coming in, typically in newspapers, articles, blogs, all of these things are publishing content, and typically the most latest or newest content is the most relevant. So we configure the search engine to take that into account. One of the other special features about Azure Search is it is geospatial aware. So if we have documents that have a geolocation, if we have a latitude and a longitude, we can take that into account when we run our query, so we can get back results that are relevant to a user's specific location. So this is great for things like Yelp, scenarios where you're trying to find relevant restaurants, especially for apps running on devices where that information is easy to obtain. And finally, we just look at unstructured content. So maybe you have a big repository of PDFs or Office files. The typical scenario there would be just to put those in SharePoint, run your search from there. But if you're trying to integrate within a very specific scenario, you could also index that content within Azure Search. So those are search scenarios in general. So why Azure Search? So Azure Search is built on the Elasticsearch engine. So this is powered by Lucene, a lot of open source software. But what you get with Azure is a little bit beyond just the basics of Elasticsearch. We handle the scaling for you, so you can easily add more partitions, more replicas. Partition is a division of your content based on number of documents, sort of like a shard in a database. A replica allows you to scale your query volume up. Again, Azure Search is fully managed, so you've got some very powerful relevancy tools at your disposal. You've got specific business goals, you can expose those through custom logic within the search configuration, and we'll explore some of these more in depth as we go on. Azure Search has access to some of the NLP, or natural language processing, components that are coming out of Office and Bing. These teams have acquired tons and tons of data that they're able to pull into the product and make that available to your own content. And we'll get into a little bit more of that as well. Most importantly, it's really easy to integrate. Azure Search has a concept of an indexer, which connects to your existing data, whether it's in an Azure SQL database or an Azure table, or even if it's just sitting in blob storage. If it's in the cloud, we can usually pull it in and get it indexed and make it available with minimal effort. And finally, one of the things we're going to look at is the analytics story with this. So every search query that comes in gets logged. So we have all this information about how long the query took, what the user was searching for, and what types of filters or other operations they might have applied to that search. So we can pull all that data in and run some pretty powerful analytics using a tool like Power BI. So if we look at some of the core search technology, we're looking at, we start with the index schema. So the index schema, like a database schema, describes the shape of your data. So you probably have an ID field, you have a title field, a body field, and after that, it's pretty wide open. You'll have dates, published date, update time. You have a wide array of types that we can map to. So we can have a string collection for, say, tags on a document. And of course, the geo point is there as well. So we can map all these data types to your existing content. And then once we have that data type in the search schema, we have to make a decision about what types of search features we want to make available to that particular field. So the first one is the most obvious, it's searchable. If your field is searchable, you get access to some of the NLP techniques, like some of the linguistics analysis, some of the stop word removal. This is what we typically think of when we think of a search engine, text matching. We can also make a field filterable. So if you think about terms like metadata fields, so if you say, I want to find articles that were published after, you know, January 1st, that's an example of a filter. Or I want to find restaurants within a particular geofence, that's a filter. And then we have some pretty standard stuff like sorting and retrievable fields as well. So if we go beyond just the basics, just beyond a search schema, we can really start to customize your index. So we have the concept of analyzers, and this is something that comes to us from the Lucene package. Microsoft has extended that with over 50 languages that we support. So you can use either the Microsoft Analyzer or the built-in Lucene Analyzer. The Microsoft Analyzers get you a little bit better word breaking, tokenization, and stop word removal. One key feature that most customers really like is the concept of suggestors. So a suggestion is, think of it as a query autocomplete. So you're typing in your query and you get a list of suggestions back. So this is really good for, say, movie titles, or if you have a separate index, maybe you've indexed maybe the top 1,000 queries that come in, so you can easily suggest some content to the user. And finally, we look at scoring. So out of the box, I think the results, you know, that come back are usually pretty relevant based on just textual similarity to the query. But in a lot of cases, we have a specific business case where we need to add a specific boost to a set of documents. Maybe we want to rank the newest documents a little bit higher, or maybe the newest documents over the last 3 days specifically. Typically, once we get to a more advanced state, we'll want to apply some field weighting. So the more specific a field is about the document, typically the more weight it would have. An example of that would be is title. So if you have a match in your title, say if you search for Michael Phelps, and Michael Phelps appears in the title, in one document, and in another document, he's buried in the body somewhere, and the title is really generic. You want to give more weight to that first document so that he, the user finds the content that they're looking for. So how do we get the content into the index? That's usually the hard part. Azure Search has a set of what we call indexers, and these automatically connect to your data source. So this would be some cloud data source. DocumentDB is supported, Azure Blob Storage. And within Azure Blob, we can connect to CSVs, which is something we'll see at the end of the presentation here. But we can also connect to JSON, we can connect to Word files, and we can connect to PDF documents as well, or HTML. If you have a repository of HTML documents, those can be ingested all on a set schedule. So Azure Search will connect up to every 5 minutes or every day or whatever you decide, and it will pull that new content in. So it keeps track of change tracking, so you're not continuously re-indexing the same content. If you get more of an advanced scenario, you can look at the push API. So the push API bypasses what the indexer is doing, and it gives us full control over the content that we're indexing into the search schema. So this allows the developer to connect directly to REST endpoints hosted in Azure and push in the exact content that you need. So if you're looking at more of a real-time update, something faster than every 5 minutes, this is where you would look. And of course, as you can push one document, of course, you could push one document at a time as they come in, but we always try to find a way to batch those up. You can batch those up into groups of up to 1,000. So that's how to get content into the index. How do we get our content out? How does the end user find their information? The first and most obvious is just a couple of key phrases, a couple of search terms. These get mapped to our searchable fields, and we get results back based on some statistical probability of a term relative to a document, relative to the corpus as a whole. Beyond that, we can limit our query to just a few subsets of our document. So this applies to anything that we have set a filterable value on in the index, looking at specific metadata. One core concept of search is facets. So a facet you can think of as an aggregation or a count of a specific category of your search index. So a typical scenario would be maybe a product. Maybe you sell maybe 1,000 different products, but you have a taxonomy there. So you're searching for, and you want to limit or give a count, rather, of the products in each specific category. So you want to show all of your bicycles, all of your hiking gear, and separate those out, and even give a little count so users can see how many results are in each category. And you can use those facets to drive the filtering and drill down aspects of the of subsequent queries. Azure Search takes care of highlighting for us. So when we say highlighting, we're actually applying a specific markup tag to the results that come back. So when you initiate a request to Azure Search, you get a JSON document back that describes all of the results and includes all of the facet information, but it also includes hit highlighting. So each document that comes back is going to have some HTML embedded in it that you can optionally use to pass on to the end user. So we can highlight where in each document the most relevant hits are. And then one of the more advanced features is what we call more like this. So if you've got a set of results coming back, you can expose to the end user a tool called more like this. So more like this is a search operator that takes a specific document that's been indexed, and it analyzes the terms and the term frequency, and it builds a secondary query, and it returns content that has a lot of those same key terms and phrases. And because we're built on the Lucene index, or the Lucene open source platform, we have a lot of access to some of the more advanced Lucene query language tools that you get with Elasticsearch. So I've got some examples here. You can actually see the queries that are going through. We can do term boosting. And what this means is that if we have a set of words that the user has submitted, and we know that some terms are more important than other terms. So in this case, we're searching for quiet, clean hotels, but we know that clean is our more relevant term in this particular query, so we give it a little bit of an extra boost. So you see the caret 3 there. Quiet, still important, a little more important than just the other term, so we give it a 2. And the plus you see there in hotels is just to ensure that hotels comes back. The plus operator says you must find this match in the document. The Lucene query language supports regular expressions. This is something, it's kind of a last resort in your search. If you can't find your content using standard tokenization and word breaking, you can apply some regular expression. So this opens you up to matching on the infix or suffix queries. You can see here we're matching on the hotels or motels. So if you had some kind of alternate spelling of a term that only occurred in the middle of the word, that would be an infix wildcard. And lastly, we get access to a fuzzy search operator. So we can take a term, and if we're not sure it's spelled right, or maybe we're not sure that the content in our index is spelled correctly, we can apply a fuzzy search matching to specific terms. So in this case, the user might have misspelled Atlanta. So we can say, why don't you find similar results in our content where we can find a match based on one edit distance. So this is based on the Levenshtein edit distance algorithm, which, if you're familiar, just means a match is considered if we can change only one character or one edit in this case. So I think we can apply 1 to 3 edit distances within Azure Search. And lastly, getting back to some of the benefits of running in a managed search environment is really all about scalability. So I touched on this earlier, but a partition is a shard of your data. So each partition on the basic or the standard tier can hold about 15 million documents. So that's pretty good for most people. But as you get more and more content, you're going to need to add more and more partitions. That's really easy to do. You just open up the Azure portal, and you drop in more partitions, and everything gets resized accordingly, maybe 15 minutes or so. Some of the newer service, each Azure Search service is associated with a SKU, so all the way from free, which has much, much lower limits, all the way up to maybe S2 or S3, which can hold a lot more dense amounts of data on each partition, up to 60 million. So if you expand that out and look at how many documents you can put on each partition, on the S3 SKU, which is currently in preview, you can hold up to 1.4 billion documents in your search index, which is a pretty good number. If you're indexing the web, maybe it would exceed that amount. On the flip side of a partition is a replica. So a replica is just a copy of your index. And the reason you would copy your index is so you can increase your query volume. So as your site or your app experiences more traffic, each replica is going to have to do more work. So you scale out rather than up. You're adding more copies. At the standard tier, each replica can serve approximately 15 queries per second, which is a pretty decent number. Obviously, as you scale up on the SKU level, each replica can serve more and more queries per second. And finally here, we have a concept of a search unit. So a search unit is your billing unit, and it's just a simple multiplier of the number of partitions times the number of replicas equals your search unit. So you're billed at the unit of search units. And so that's kind of Azure Search in general. I just wanted to give a quick overview in case anybody was not super familiar with some of the features, and we're gonna go into a demo now. So this is a really simple website I built that we'll see once we switch over. There it is. So this is a demo site. We're kind of looking at a few common scenarios about why or how you would use search. So one is the media search demo. So I had some colleagues that did similar presentations at Ignite a few years back, and we thought it would be cool if we combined Azure Search with some of the speech-to-text recognition that some of the other Azure services can do. So we're able to kind of daisy-chain these services to make a really cool user experience. So we only have a few documents indexed, but if we search, for example, SharePoint, we can actually see this content coming back. And what's really interesting here is we get highlights from the video that Azure has detected the word SharePoint being spoken. So Azure Media Services decoded this video and got the text for us, and then we index that text in Azure Search to make it easily available. So you're combining really the best of both of these. And with all the metadata that comes back, we can quickly jump to a match and immediately start to play that video result where the speaker is talking about the SharePoint URL or whatever specific content that we've identified. So that's some of the media search kind of integration and metadata aspects. As I've hinted, GeoSearch is really one of the most powerful aspects of the Azure Search platform. And one of the things that really sets it apart is the ability to essentially draw a custom fence around the area that you're interested in. So you could expose this in the UI, or if you maybe know a specific neighborhood, you can you can highlight those, kind of like Redfin does. So what we have here is just a static set of real estate listings in the Boston area, as well as the Seattle area. So if we can zoom in here, I'm going to try to draw a shape around maybe a neighborhood that we might be interested in. So first we'll... So right off the bat, we can just draw a square shape, and we know the coordinates of the map because we're hooked into the Bing Maps API, so we can immediately get results back based on the bounding box of that map. However, square is not super interesting. Maybe I really just want to find results, in this neighborhood, Jamaica Central. And so I could outline it. And then we get results back focused solely on that neighborhood. Neighborhoods, of course, at least where I'm from in Boston, are very, very much nonlinear. So it really helps to be able to outline a custom polygon. And if we... One of the other features that Azure Search can do is actually sort by a specific or provided location. So in this case, the application is going to ask me for my current location, which is in Atlanta, where we don't have any data. So it's going to give me the closest ones to where we are right now. So most of these are probably equally far away, but we can actually sort based on that information instead of limiting to a specific geolocation. And then again, you can see some examples of facets here on the right. So we've got a neighborhood. We can see all the current results are in the neighborhood Jamaica Plain. And we can see we have 6 houses, 19 condos, and 1 townhouse. One of the sort of cooler aspects of faceting is the ability to take a numeric value and split it up into specific buckets. So here we can see that the price per square foot has been categorized for us. These are categories that we specified in the query, but the results apply each count to the buckets that we specify. So that is an example of GeoSearch. And lastly, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the AdventureWorks sample database, but this is kind of the de facto Microsoft demo. So this is a search engine built on AdventureWorks. AdventureWorks is a database that you can deploy, which has all this great information about products specific to bicycles and a little bit of clothing. So we can just do a quick sample here, maybe mountain bikes. And just a few things to take note of. I did a search for bikes. I think the content that is actually in the index is not plural. It's a mountain bike. So just applying some basic limitization in language functionality, we're able to sort of normalize queries just with an easy configuration option. If we had a more advanced scenario where maybe bike and bicycle are considered synonyms, we could configure the index to recognize a set of synonyms that are specific to our use case. Azure Search doesn't have a built-in knowledge of every specific domain, so it exposes some of these APIs so that the developer or the business can make their own decisions. And using the string collection feature, we can actually build out these multi-level taxonomies. So if we know that our products conform to a specific taxonomy with a parent-child or grandchild relationship, we can index those and then apply filters on them as well. And then this is at the bottom, we see another sort of a more generalized use of facets. Typically, when we think of facets, we give an aggregate sum at the end, but it can also be used just to provide a general overview of what the site makes available. So just right off the bat, we can show the user a real-time result set of the types of products that we sell. And maybe we don't give them the actual counts, because that wouldn't be as interesting at this point. All right, so that's our quick demo of general features. Let me put this back to extend. Now I'd like to talk a little bit about a specific customer case study. In this case, it's NBC Sports. NBC Sports came to us about a year ago, maybe a year and a half, and they had a specific use case in mind, which is the 2016 Summer Olympics. They have tons of content that comes out of their product websites. This all comes from an on-prem. Some of them are blogging, some of them are just document repositories, but they need to find a way to make all this stuff searchable and relevant. So they had a handful of requirements up front. As I mentioned, all their content originates on premises, so we need to find a way to get that to the cloud. And we need to find, once it's in the cloud, we need to transform it so that it makes sense to our search schema that we define. The second requirement was video results. Video is very important to NBC for obvious reasons. They're a content media company. Their goal is to drive visitors to the most relevant contents, and video is very relevant for a sporting event like the Olympics. Thirdly, we need a way to manage misspellings and synonyms. A lot of these queries come in for athlete names that are not always easy to spell. The easiest example to think of is Phelps. Maybe most people spell it with a PH, but somebody's going to try to spell it with an F, and we need to account for that. And that's not something that a generalized language understanding model might get right off the bat. So these are some of the things that we need to apply up front. The fourth thing that was really important to the customer is the concept of entity matching. So you can think of entity matching like a top hit or a best hit for a given query. If they have a specific landing page, maybe for a particular athlete, we need to feature that right at the top of the results and really drive users to that content. So some other examples of that would be specific sports. So if somebody searches for basketball, we want to drive them to the landing page for basketball, while still providing relevant news articles and images and videos. And lastly, what was really key for them is type ahead suggestions. So when we look at some of the statistics, we'll actually see how helpful that was. So these type ahead suggestions, again, are results that come back in real time for partial text matching. So as you type in the search bar, if you type in BAS, you're going to get suggestions back for basketball or maybe some athlete names that begin with those three letters. Okay, so I'm going to attempt another demo here. So this is the front end that NBC has published. We didn't work on the front end. We worked entirely on the search back end. But you can see that search is featured here pretty prominently. So we can just start to initiate a query. Let's search for, and if the Wi-Fi is all hooked up, we should start to see some query suggestions. So there's, you know, Phelps coming back. I think they've probably limited it to 3 characters. Azure Search supports partial matching on a single character, but you may choose to limit how early in the typing session that you want to try to get a result back. So I think in this case, NBC went with 3 characters. So we can see here we've typed in only 3 characters. The first suggestion is actually the word that we're searching for, which is expected, but we also get partial matches. So we get basketball, we get the basketball arena. This is a name of one of the venues in Rio. So if we wanted to run a search on that, we could. So I'm just gonna, and as soon as I hit enter, it takes the suggestion and runs the query, and we're able to see some of these results here. So some of the things that I'll point out here are the use of facets up here. So we're faceting on the different types of categories. So users, if they're only interested in videos, they can quickly jump to videos and start to see only that content. Up at the top, these are the featured content for basketball. So the most relevant landing pages with the associated graphics are presented right at top. So it's a pretty general term, basketball, so most people just kind of want to get to see the specific results, schedule, and rosters. So that's what's featured up top. Similarly, video. So video, this is actually a second query on top of the first one with the entities. This is our video results. So this block is limited to only content coming back from search that's been tagged as video. So we have 2 types of video. We're not going to see the first type, but the first type is streaming. So as as the Olympics are ongoing, maybe there's an event going on right now, we want to put that right at the top. So we would see a streaming section with a link to watch something live. Unfortunately, that's something that's hard to demo here pushing into October. But what we can show are replays. So a lot of people come in here and they want to see maybe some highlights or some replays of something that they heard about the next day. So those results are here, and they can just page through those and get that content back from search. And lastly, we have a more traditional search results. These are a mixture of news articles coming in, general content that's been written about the sport, as well as some photo galleries and athlete pages as well. And of course, we can page through the results. So this is the customer site. Just the kind of key takeaway and why we had to apply such some of the scaling features that we'll talk about in just a few minutes. Just about each one of these blocks is a separate query. So we want to get one query that has facets for all of our content, so we know the counts. But then we want to actually query our entity index, so that's a second query. Videos is a third, and then content is a fourth. So just that one query for basketball actually gets translated into four or maybe even five queries on the back end. So it's really important to take that into consideration when we're scaling our service. Pardon me while I wrestle with PowerPoint. So we can look at the architecture within the cloud as to how we made that possible. So we start on premises with the customer's content and we move it into Azure Storage. So Azure Storage, it could be Azure SQL, it could be Azure Tables, it could be DocumentDB. We chose storage because it's really simple, it's easy to visualize and test. What was really key was for them to have the ease of integration, and blob storage is one of the simplest ways to integrate content, especially for developers who aren't familiar with some of the cloud APIs that we might have. So it's really a two-step process. So we take a single JSON document. This is describes an article. It could be a news article, could be an athlete page, and we upload it to blob storage, and then we add it to a queue. So it's really a two-step process. Once it's in the queue, we have a third tier, the Azure website. So this is actually an Azure web job. This is pulling information off the queue, and what it gets from the queue is an identifier that points to the blob. So you can kind of imagine that as a linear process. And all that Azure website's doing is some basic ETL. It's extracting, it's transforming, and loading the content into Azure Search. So some of the types of transformations that we need to look at, we can't just drop the original JSON document into the search schema as is. We first need to make sure that we map their fields to the search index fields. Any complex types would need to be flattened. And then we need to, beyond that, apply some synonyms. So we do a little bit of matching based on the content. And the customer provided us with a list of synonyms and common misspellings. So part of that transformation process is to look at the searchable content and apply any synonyms. Or it could be a misspelling to the content, and that gets indexed as well. So if a user searches for F-E-L-P-S, Phelps, and our content only contains Phelps with the proper spelling, we want to make sure the content has all of the alternate misspellings in the index as well. So finally, we push that content, we batch it up, and submit it to Azure Search. So in this case, we're using the push API. The web job checks the queue maybe every 30 seconds, so we get a much finer grained control over how frequently we're pushing new content to the index. Some of the features that have come out since this architecture was developed might make some of the architecture a little bit simpler, so we can actually do some lightweight transformations on JSON blobs, just purely in configuration. So if you had a complex data type and you needed to flatten it to conform to your search schema, you could do that now in some configuration options within Azure Search. So finally, on the opposite end, we have users. So end users are hitting the search engine almost directly. They're coming through a CDN proxy. So it's really important to have a search index geographically located on each coast. The market for this was the United States, so we want to make sure we have geographic proximity to the index, since the client is connecting almost directly to the search backend. The CDN is just a essentially an HTTP proxy for that service. And the CDN is able to geolocate within each geographic location that we would have a search engine. So next we can kind of look at some of the scaling decisions that we made. So you can see we have some on-prem data coming in from the bottom, and it's actually hitting two Azure data centers, one in west, one on the east. So the customer is responsible for writing twice, and then we're able to provide redundancy on top of that. So you get some built-in redundancy, obviously, with Azure Search, and that's what the replicas are doing there. You see we have five of them. But what we decided to do was take a step beyond and go for complete geo-redundancy. As you know, when you're running a data center, if the data center itself has an issue, you want to be able to fail over to a second data center for mission-critical applications. So again, we're going through a single storage on each data center, a single web app on each data center, pushing into a 5x replica search engine, again, in each data center. And the CDN proxy sitting on the top of this is intelligent enough to know which data center a user should be sent to. So some of the specific scoring scenarios that we needed to come up with, as this is an article and news feed almost, we really wanted to boost content that is newer up to the top and not just rely purely on the textual statistics of the content. Some of the content in the index is of a historical nature, so we have things from Beijing, things from London, that are in the index and might be relevant for a specific query, but we really want to make sure that that newest content ends up on top, or at least close to the top if it's textually relevant as well. Because the Olympics are so short, just a couple of weeks, we can finally tune what we call the boosting duration of a freshness scoring profile. So the boosting duration says, I want to apply a boost to documents that are within the last 2 days, within the last 3 days, which is what we ended up going with for this particular scenario in order to get the most latest results to have them most affected by the boosting. And then the weighting. So we have lots of searchable fields in this index. Like we mentioned a little bit earlier, we want to give the most weight to the most specific fields. So two examples of that were their title and tag fields. So they have a lot of editors that work really hard to make sure that the tag fields really accurately and concisely describe the data. And if we have a search in one, or a hit, rather, in one of those tag fields, we want to make sure that that is reflected in the search results themselves. So typically, the more specific a field is, the higher weighting it should have. And this is always something that you have to test, play with, and iterate on before you find a solution that works for any given scenario. All right, so I'm going to do another demo here and just show some of the advanced sort of searches that we can do using some of the advanced search operators. Okay, so this is just a really simple generic search UI that I've developed to kind of help exercise a lot of the REST endpoints and show off a lot of the features. Everything that we do here, we could be doing through the REST API. So right now, this is pointing at the NBC search content, so we can kind of look at a few different search scenarios. So if we search for, say, Phelps, and I'm for this particular one, I'm going to disable the search scoring profile, set it to none, and then just run a search, and we can compare the results that come back. So you can kind of see here why we want to look towards scoring profiles and specifically freshness boosting once we look at the default results that come back from textual matching. So this is an article, it's called Michael Phelps' Baby is Born. It's certainly textually relevant. It has Phelps all over it. If we go to the page, it'll talk about Phelps, 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 and to the search engine, it's the most relevant content. But if we look at the published date, which we can see here, it's from May. So that's long before the Olympics started. So what we can do is go back, run our query again, and we'll turn on the production scoring profile. And I'll jump into how these scoring profiles are configured, but now we can see that the top result here is, they're saying goodbye to the Olympics. So this is clearly published towards the end of the events. And if we look at the published date, we can see that's reflected down here as well. That was it. I think that's pretty much the last day of the events. And as we scroll through the results, we can see that these are probably a little bit more relevant to somebody coming to the site after the Olympics have closed, which is what we're doing now. We want to kind of see the most relevant results. Yes, we want to see articles about Phelps, but it helps to see them in a more of a timelined sorting. But we don't want to just sort by time. There's a fine distinction between sorting by time and boosting by time, because we want to just give a little bit of an extra boost to these documents. We don't want to do a strict sorting. In that case, you might get a very generic article that was published yesterday that only mentions Phelps once, and maybe it's not even Michael Phelps. It could be a different one. We don't want that one sitting on the top of the results page. So one of the challenges here is because this content is now considered static, the Olympics are over, so we're not seeing new content coming in, we have to think carefully about how we control that boosting duration. So the boosting duration says apply the boost only to the freshest content over X number of days or even X number of hours or years or months. So we have to be really careful about how that's applied. So maybe during the Olympics, we set the boosting duration really short because we have a lot of content coming in. Maybe in a couple of weeks or months now after, we set the boosting duration to 6 months. We come back in a couple of years, and then you can start to expand it more as time goes on. All right, so now I'm gonna just do a couple more searches to kind of show you some more advanced features. Sticking with the swimming theme, if we search for Lochte, so this isn't how he spells his name, but maybe I'm not sure, and so I just hit enter, and we can see we didn't get matches on the content, but we know up front that this is a potential and common misspelling of Lochte's name, so we've indexed it into this document as well. So we're able to get matches on it, even though the user has misspelled the name. We'll see a few more advanced ways to do this with fuzzy matching in a few minutes. But if you know some common misspellings or some common synonyms, you can apply those either at indexing time or even now we can look at configuring custom analyzers to do this without really having to transform the content ourselves. So anywhere in our content that we saw Lochte, we're also going to have this misspelling sitting next to it. Some of the downsides, obviously, are you don't get that hit highlighting because it's pointing to a different field. There's some workarounds now, like I said, with some of the built-in support for synonyms that wasn't available when we did this. So now if we go back and maybe some more common misspellings. So maybe somebody's thinking about whatever that movie was, basketball, and they misspell basketball, and then they don't get any results back, and that's not good. We want to at least give them something. So the developer can choose to enable the full power of the Lucene search engine, and so we switch our query type to full. And then we can apply a tilde to our term, and again, this is our fuzzy match operator. So end users probably aren't going to be using this syntax. Maybe they will if it's kind of documented well for them. But one of the common scenarios is to just simply tokenize your text and apply the Lucene operators on every single term, or maybe on a term larger than 4 characters, just so that you can enable fuzzy matching for the user, even if they don't even know what that means. So I've switched it to full, I've added the fuzzy matching, and now we can see we get some results back. So unlike with Lochte, which was a common misspelling, but we had transformed that ourselves and put that into the index ourselves, this one is actually matching on the word basketball in the index, and we can see that reflected in the hit highlighting. So one of the cool features, I think at least, is the ability to find terms or tokens in content that are close to each other based on some specified proximity. So we can actually do proximity searching with some of these Lucene operators. So maybe we want to see just some content about Phelps, where freestyle is probably used in the same sentence. So again, we set the query type to full. And we do a phrase, so I'm going to type some quotes. And freestyle. And then the operator for this is again tilde, but because it's in behind quotes, it has a slightly different meaning. So it's finding these two terms with a distance of 4. So these two terms have to be fairly close to each other in order to be considered a match on our results. And so now we can see we get results back where Phelps is specifically being mentioned with his event, the freestyle. And so that's pretty advanced, but maybe I'm still not quite getting what I want with those results. I can be even more specific, and I say I do minus relay. So the minus sign says don't include any content that matches this term. So I really just want to be looking at the relay right now. Or the freestyle, rather. And we can see that the results are getting more and more specific as we go on. And in fact, the first result is his 200-meter relay from Beijing. And in fact, I looked this up. It kind of surprised me that this was 2008. So I was like, well, is that really an actual good result? And it turns out that was, I believe, the last time he won the gold for this particular event, so that really makes sense now. And lastly, we can get kind of creative with this. We can say we want to find articles about Phelps where he did not win a gold, he did not win a silver, but he did win a bronze. Like, what is he winning anything but gold? And we can see we have 5 results here. And the first result is in Athens. I looked this one up too. That was the last time he won a bronze, or he didn't get a gold or a silver. So that makes perfect sense here. All right. All right, so that's it for the advanced search scenarios. Now we can kind of look at what Azure Search was seeing during the events. So we saw 35 million total searches. So this is a search or a suggestion. Certainly the query suggestions would be fairly large quantity since those are coming in as people type. It's about just under 2 million queries per day. So pretty decent volumes here. I think I think we came well under our target replica count. We put 5 replicas on the architecture just to sort of account for any surprises. It's only a 2-week event, so there's really no penalty not to scale it out. And our peak sort of traffic moment was here with just over 5,000 queries per minute occurring about halfway through the events. So you can kind of get a sense. Like I said, it's just a 2-week event, so it's a very very specific use case for a search site like this. So we have this huge volume of scale that then just sort of disappears when people move on to different things. So we can see on August 5th, with the opening ceremonies is when things really start to pick up and it doubles and then pretty much stays steady. You can see there's some pretty clear patterns with respect to time of day. Those are our dips. And then it can be instructive to kind of break that down a little bit and say, well, what are my peak hours? So we can use this information to dynamically or rather programmatically scale the search cluster. So if we know at, from 3 to 7 a.m., there's just not many people visiting the site, we can scale down the cluster and save a little bit of money that way if we know that these patterns are repeating every day. So these times were all East Coast, UTC minus 4. And we can see that the busiest time is really in the evening. That's when people seem to be doing the most searches, right up until midnight, really, and then it trails off from there. And then it can be helpful to know if you have a busy day of the month or day of the week, again, to kind of help you plan out your scaling and know when your users are coming to your site most often. And this is all something that we can expose through the search analytics logs, which are made available through the UI. These are just things I've collected to present here on the PowerPoint. So interestingly, Thursday is not a very busy time for people to be searching on the Olympics. So we can actually see all of these stats on the analytics dashboard. There we go. So this is Power BI. If you're familiar with Power BI, the search team has exposed a Power BI desktop module where you can automatically push all of your logs into Power BI using a few configuration steps and a few custom templates to expose it here. There's a couple different things you can do with the logs that are collected for you. When you log into the portal, you'll see that you have a few options. The first is just to dump them onto a blob storage account, which is the simplest thing you can do. You could then drop it into a Hadoop cluster. I ended up doing some Spark operations on it to generate the logs and the statistics that we saw there. Or you can kind of go the fully managed route and let Power BI and the analytics engine push all of that stuff into a dashboard that you can use with really no input. I didn't really configure this at all. This is all kind of out of the box. So we can see we get searches over time. Searches today. This is all kind of this is actually a static snapshot from just when the Olympics ended. So this particular dashboard is not being updated at the moment, but it's good to kind of see what an active cluster would look like. So we can see right up front what are our most common search queries. We'll see another more in-depth analysis on these, but gymnastics, there's not a really big surprise there that's the most common search query in the U.S. market. Search latency is kind of a funny one. This is actually adding up all of the milliseconds, so it's not an average indicator. We weren't taking 200 or 20 million seconds or milliseconds to serve queries, but you can use this to kind of gauge, are we going up or down relative to the query volume? And likewise, zero result queries, due to a sort of customization that we're doing with our queries, a lot of these terms are not actually zero result queries. They're included here because we specified a parameter, which is to say, you know, don't return me any results. I just want to see facet counts. And so the Power BI is putting them here and showing that these are zero result search queries. So there's a couple reasons you might want to look at zero result search query terms. The first is, you know, maybe your content isn't as relevant as your users think it should be. So if you see terms here that are very common, then it's an area to look at and say, maybe we need more content like this. And the second example would be content that is are common misspellings that you're not accounting for either in the synonyms or the other mapping and transformation processes in the back end. So you can really use some of these analytics to kind of drive some more relevancy to the site. And then if we just explore the dashboard a little bit more, we can see how many documents were returned over time. So each query could return, you know, anywhere from zero to tens of thousands of hits, not necessarily all delivered to the user at once, but that's how many were matched. And then looking a little bit more on the back end and how content's getting into the index, we can see how many documents are getting pushed and with what frequency, and even the latencies and any errors that might be coming in. So you might see errors if you are pushing content too fast based on your scale and your configuration there. So like I said, I took those search logs sitting in Blob and I pushed them into my development Spark cluster. My current job is doing a lot of analytics, big data analysis, so I thought it would be really cool to take this big data. It's a couple hundred, can't remember how much, the logs are compressed, but uncompressed is just a huge tons and tons of data, so we store it on Azure Blob. And Spark or HDI can connect to that data, and we can start to do some interesting grouping and filtering. So what I've done here is I've filtered out a little bit of the ones that didn't make sense, and we've identified just the top queries. So right off the bat, it's interesting to note, I think six of these are all about gymnastics. So I think it's pretty well understood that gymnastics is the most popular summer sport, at least in this market. So we've got gymnastics, Simone Biles, and then a couple other names as well driving the Olympics content. What's also interesting to note here are the capitalizations. So we can infer based on the capital letters in the queries that these users were, or these queries were submitted by users who accepted a query suggestion. Because our query suggestions are populated based on initial capital casing. So some of the ones that don't have, that are all lowercase are more traditionally entered in manually. So it would even be interesting to look at those side by side and see what were the most, what were the top queries overall, but then what were the top queries that users typed in manually. So you can see opening ceremony, India, and that's really it. Everything else was driven by the query suggestions. Again, because I am doing a lot of data science work these days, more so than when I started this project, I thought it would be interesting to take some of this content and do some cluster analysis. So if you've heard of topic modeling, this is where we take documents, we take a corpus, we analyze it, and we find common sets of co-occurring words. So a topic is just a general grouping of words. And we train a topic model. And so in order to train this topic model, I pointed it at the actual URLs that the search results are pointing to. And the topic model is able to learn relationships between specific terms. It doesn't name the topic, but if we look at the words in the topic, we can start to, as humans, identify what that topic is probably about. So the top row here, these are some of our top queries that I took from the previous slide. And I submitted that to the topic model just to see what other terms would come back. And so this is kind of an advanced scenario, but you could use this to really drive similar content. So you could say, these are some similar queries. So if I type a search for gymnastics, I could have maybe a sidebar that says, you know, these are some similar terms that you might also be interested in that would drive additional queries and sort of additional discovery of your content. And you can see most of these, you know, kind of make sense. I didn't spend a whole lot of time tuning the topic model, so some of the results were kind of surprising, but the topic model results are not always intuitive, but we can usually kind of get a sense of what the relationships are. And lastly, I mentioned that so these are, again, a more accurate view of the top queries with no results. So these are the search terms that came back where the documents just didn't match anything in our index. Although I've removed the results where we actually asked for no documents in order to be more accurate. So right at the top, you can see that most people are misspelling decathlon. I think there needs to be an extra A, or maybe they gave an extra A. And so we can use this to drive maybe our missing content, which is the second one. So the second one is a name, I believe, of an athlete from Iran. So a little outside the market in this case, but if we see that a lot of queries are coming in for this individual, maybe we need to think about why that is. You know, is it coming from a wide variety of users, or is just a certain subset of users driving these queries? Is there some content that we should be looking at getting in our index? And some other examples of misspelled sports, shot put is typically written as two words, I believe. So that would be a great candidate for a synonym or even a more advanced character filter if we look at some of the advanced things you can do in the analysis configuration. So most of these are just misspellings and athlete names that just happen to not be featured in this market. All right, looks like I have about 5 minutes left. I can kind of do a walkthrough. So I just happen to have some blobs sitting in storage. So one of the use cases is to pull JSON or CSV content out of blob storage and get it indexed. So in this case, I've got a handful of CSV files sitting on my blob storage. So each one of these CSV files contains about 10,000 rows of content. Each row is a document. In this case, I used some data from the Stack Overflow public data set. So in the interest of time, I'm going to drag in some pre-configured indexes so you can kind of see how easy it is to get that started. So I've configured a search service here. This is empty with the exception of a data source that points to the blob. So all we need to do to point to the blob is give it a connection string, which I've already provided, a container, and then an optional query path, which describes where the blobs sit on storage. We could optionally provide a deletion policy so that if the blob shouldn't be deleted in the index, that's reflected in search as well. So I'm going to quickly create an indexer. An indexer describes the relationship between a source, a data source, and your index itself. But before I do that, I'm going to create the index. So this index describes the Stack Overflow data set. So you can see that we have an ID, a title, a body, some tags, and a score. So nothing terribly complex there. We can also add a suggester on the title. So maybe as you're typing, you want to get suggestions to common questions. And then if we had more time, I would go into some of the custom analysis. But some of the examples that you might do here would be to make a token filter so that if somebody searches for C#, the hash sign is typically a word breaker. But we don't want to break when we see C#, so we want to keep that as a single token. We could control that from here. All right, so I've created an index. It's empty. It's called Ignite. The next step is just to create an indexer, which describes the relationship between our index schema, and our data source, which in this case is a set of CSVs. So we point it to the data source that I created. This contains the connection string back to blob storage. We specify a target index. This is the index I just created. You could run it on a schedule, or you can run it on demand. This is going to be an on-demand, one-time-only situation. What's most important here, though, because I'm parsing CSV, I come in here and set a few optional parameters. If it was JSON, I could specify that. This happens to be CSV, so I'm going to let the indexer know how to read this data. There's a lot of different options that you can specify when you're creating an indexer that describes how to map from your content to your search index. In this case, we don't need to do too much because they're almost identical. So now we can get a quick status of what the indexer is doing. We can see it's been running for a few seconds. It's already grabbed the first blob, which contains about 10,000 documents. We're already up to 25,000. So we can already start to search. The total corpus in this case will be about 100,000 documents. So maybe we search for something like, and you can see we're already searching on that content that just a few minutes ago only existed in blob storage. The indexer is pulling it in, it's indexing it. If we had some custom analyzers, those would be getting pulled in as well, so we could do our own custom tokenization. And the last thing I'll show you here are the suggestions. So if we just pick a letter, you can see that we're going to get some query suggestions back very quickly. And we can start to render or reduce. So maybe Android questions, Azure questions, maybe Azure Search, anything? Nope. Azure SQL? Yeah, so we've got some content coming in, and we can see it takes about 2 or 3 minutes to process the 100,000 documents. So I think we're just about out of time. I don't know if anybody has questions or if we need to wrap up. We can try. Yeah?
Can you, on the slide of the architecture a while ago, there's an ETL process.
Yes.
Can you talk more about a little bit about what are the steps and why did you do the
ETL? So the content that is on-prem is not the same schema that we need in order to submit a search document. We also had to do some extra extraction or enhancement on the document, which was synonyms and a few other things that we had to sort of apply based on business logic. So we wrote a custom ETL process that sits on a web job, and moves from the source content into the schema that search is expecting.
So there's a schema format that we need to comply
to? Yeah, it's not exactly like a NoSQL solution like you might look at with DocumentDB. You have a set schema, and you can add fields later, but you do need to define those up front. So with metadata, there's two ways that you would work with search results. So the question is, how do we treat metadata with search results? So the first way you would do it would be as searchable content. So maybe the metadata is a set of tags that describes the document. So these are specifically curated fields and values that maybe the editor added. So we would make those, we would mark those in the index schema as searchable. And we would give them a little bit of an extra weight. The second type of metadata is purely filterable metadata, so something like published time. You don't want to search against published time. You're probably not going to be matching, you know, the ISO date timestamp code, but what you can do is apply a filter. So if we search for Phelps, but we only search for content published after the first week of the Olympics but before the closing ceremony, then we can use that metadata to really limit what comes back from search. Did that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else? Yes, sorry, lights. Yeah.
So I have two questions.
So okay.
Why did you choose
Elasticsearch? Why did we choose Elasticsearch?
Why did you choose Elasticsearch? We leverage like a large enterprise, for SharePoint and with an enterprise search.
Mm-hmm.
We have right now at eBay, there's three searches, Autonomy, which we have as well,
mm-hmm.
SharePoint search or Fast,
yep.
And Elasticsearch. We've been told by Microsoft, we will tell you guys to assume Elasticsearch in Azure, later on it's going to duplicate them. So our question is,
I don't have any sort of future plans ahead of me. It's probably more of a design or business question. I don't really have. I can try to get somebody to follow up if you want to. Yeah,
You know, with your philosophy cloud first, mm-hmm. you essentially see what your vision is in the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
If you stop using your own search and you start, you know, moving towards Elastic, then it's basically, you know, it could be perceived as a signal that stop using fast.
Right, well, they've traditionally been segmented into like an enterprise or on-prem with SharePoint or Fast before that, and then Azure Search is more targeted towards you know, app development and a little bit more sort of bare metal, if you will. SharePoint, I think, gets you the whole suite. So it's controlling the front end, it's controlling the search back end,
and
all the document management that you get with SharePoint. For some folks, that's great, and they can use that. For other folks, they just really need a quick integration with a search engine. And so there's kind of two separate paths traditionally. No, that's really good feedback. I can take that back. All right. Sure. Yes?
Can we use this Azure Dashboard files on SharePoint Online?
So the Azure Search and SharePoint Online are really two separate things. SharePoint Online, I think, has a lot of APIs. So if you had content sitting in one that you wanted to get in the other, I think it would be a development exercise to expose it. Okay? You're welcome. All right, I think, yeah.
Is it possible to return the scores of the document as absolute scores, like 1%, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think.
Will be absolute relevant?
The relevancy score, you mean?
Percentage score.
Percentage of what exactly?
Percentage of relevancy, for example. 100% will be the exact relevant.
So typically, we measure relevance with a numeric score rather than a percentage of a whole. Because I think a perfect relevant match would be the identical document, right?
Yeah.
So in this case, we use a score, which we can get back. It won't be a percentage, but we can see it coming back. If I do this search again, it's really hard to see on the small screen, but we're getting a score back. So you can compare and see, okay, is this three times more relevant, one time, or are they pretty much have the same score? So you can compare them to other results in the set.
It would be much more useful for entity matching. For example, if I just search for Michael Phelps, and I would expect that Michael Phelps documents with the exact match of Michael Phelps will be 100% relevant.
Mm-hmm.
I'm considering whether I can use this one as an entity match search engine or not.
Oh, I see.
So the documents will be maybe person names, but the whole document unstructured text.
So
I just want to match the names of the person.
So we can, there's a couple different things you could do. You could either do phrase search, or you could do, there's two modes. You can search match any term, or you match all terms.
None of them work.
Okay. All right.
Between these two ends, I will need that. You said that there is a feature of entity matching.
So the entity, that was part of the customer use case. So we just considered an entity match when it.
From the query, right?
Yeah, from the query, if it matched, if all the terms from the query matched our.
Introduce many additional terms, but if I see Michael Phelps in the query, I need to detect it, for example. All of my document sets will be name sets.
I see.
So this kind of.
Okay. It's good feedback. It's not something that we currently expose.
There is something that I gave feedback in Tech Europe years ago.
Okay.
Maybe we can discuss it in more details.
Mm-hmm.
There is a strong need
with
this kind of situation. And no out-of-box solutions, I think, provide this kind of solution.
Okay. Yeah, let's sync up after this. I probably have to give up the room at this point. But yeah, I'm happy to chat. Anything else before I turn off the mic? Yeah, I'll give you an email at the end. I'll sync up with you, both of you. All right, thanks everyone.